New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. We're here to hang out with you. Kick off your work week. And thank you much for choosing us to get it started. If you're new here, you're going to want to, and you don't want to listen to us talk, you're going to want to fast forward to about the 4-minute mark. It's usually about when the show gets kicking off because we got a lot of business to get through. Part of that business is if you don't listen to the Higher Side chats, you need to go support Greg and his crew and everything they're doing over there. Also, our interview with them just dropped today, which is not actually today, but today when we recorded. So go over there and check it out. Great conversation. It was a good time. Great host. Do that for us as a gift to ourselves. But this week I'm bringing you a exorcism story, one that I hadn't heard before, but apparently it's well documented. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that. We got to get through the business. So check us out at all social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. You'll find us there. Come join the community. Be part of the cult. It's a great time. It's not even a weird cult. It's a pretty normal cult. And then on the spectrum of cults, it's just kind of like a family, but not like a Manson family, like a Hollow Sky family.
Yeah, we're not trying to go down that road.
No, we're cool. So just be cool. So if you have
still be alive after you drink our Kool-Aid.
Yeah. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to share on a future show, Kyle's got some info for you.
I do. As always, it's in the show notes. Easiest and most simple form of finding it. However, I know that most people are about like myself and don't want to do that because clicking that little drop down is a little too much strenuous activities. So with that being said, it's our email, easy peasy, hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out, shoot it over. It gets placed in the professional patented filing system. And then it makes that noise, and then it goes right to its own episode. We don't even have to do anything. It's just a byproduct of our existence.
Okay. Yeah, and the noises as well. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. You can go over to Patreon, which is cool. For $7 a month, you get all kinds of free shit. Free stuff. My bad. Free stuff. You get exclusive episodes, exclusive casket breath drops, ad-free episodes, early episodes, coupons to the store, all kinds of good things. It's a good time. You can also go to hollowskypodcast.com. We have merch over there you can check out. Bunch of cool stuff, which you will see new hats dropping there soon. So If you like head, get a hat. Also, you can share the show word of mouth, which is the best thing you can do. The second best thing you can do is shoot us your shipping address and I'll send you some QR codes, some stickers, some slaps. You can just vandalize everything. It's a good time. Third thing is go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And I will gladly shout you out on a show if I find it. That being said, this week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from the MDMA Ferry.
That's a good one.
Hell yeah. I bet they see some stuff. Yeah. MDMA Ferry says, 5 stars. I love Hollow Sky. Steve and Kyle are dope. I've been slapping those QR stickers all over so more people can join the cult. Heart emoji. Thanks, MDMA Ferry. You're the best. Thanks for leaving us a 5-star rating and review. See, QR codes, they work. They work.
Every time. Every time.
They work 92% of the time. But anyway, we're here for what everybody wants. Exorcisms. It's great. Demonic possession. That's why we're here.
Good times.
This particular case I had not heard of before, but I stumbled across it in this book here, this old ass book, Exorcism Fact Not Fiction. And it
I'm with it.
This book is so old. For people who are just listening and not tuning into the YouTube, I apologize. It has cigarette ads in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For a brand I've never heard of.
Yeah. It also has a library book placard.
The awesome.
Last time this was rented was July 20th, 1974. It's 10 years older than I am.
Awesome.
It smells like...
It looks like an old VHS cover.
Yeah, it's sick. It is sick.
It is awesome.
Evil spirits lure people to their death? Do exorcists have the power to expel malevolent beings from their victims? Are the ghosts that haunt old houses really spirits imprisoned out of time? These are the questions they were asking in the 70s. My people.
They were ahead of the curve.
Yeah, anyway. To get into it, how did I start this out here? All right. It's a quote. German quote translated to English. It says, "Man, do not mock the time of grace, for judgment is not far off." This
ominous.
Very phrase was found on the outside window shutter, scrawled onto it, of a woman in 1840 who was battling not one, not two, but 1,067 demons that had possessed herself.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I figure one is probably not that fun to deal with, but having over a K inside you, that's not very fun.
Yeah.
Furthermore, I feel like to truly represent the episode, you have to say that in German.
I didn't even bother to write it down because I'm going to struggle enough with names and names of towns.
Great. Authenticity is now out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just assuming that's what it means in German. That's what the internet told me. So, but to just wake up one day and find that scrawled into the wooden shutter of your home sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks. So this particular case is often chronicled as one of the most detailed accounts of successful exorcisms within Christian traditions, which is weird since I never heard about it. It was performed by a reverend named Johann Christoph Blumhart. He was the reverend of a reverend of a Lutheran parish in a German town of Mottlingen, a small town of around 850 people. The case itself was so fantastical as it started to kind of come out that a lot of other members of the clergy, I guess, were doubting it, and they made old boy Blumhart submit a detailed report on the case to higher ecclesiastical authorities to be checked out. They're like, the stuff that he's saying is happening is so crazy that we need to double check. Hence prompting it to be one of the most recorded exorcisms of all time.
It's weird that this is like the least well-known one too.
I guess to us, maybe. I don't know. I guess I don't really look into a whole lot of exorcisms all that much.
Yeah, but you feel like somewhere down the line it would have ran the circles.
Yeah. Yeah. And if, okay, so I'm going to do some sources here. Of course, you can read a little snippet. It's probably about 8 pages in this book, Exorcism Fact Not Fiction, edited by Martin Eben. I don't even know if you can find this book anymore. I don't know.
Great. That guy's an alien.
Yeah. Obviously, but there is a book that came out in 1999 that is a great coverage of the story. It is by a man named Friedrich Zundel, and it's called Awakening: One Man's Battle with Darkness, where it goes into this particular case really well, which I'm not going to get into it that much today. But if you want to check that out, you can find it for free online, and it's also on Amazon and stuff. But definitely check it out, because some of the stuff that was chronicled by Blumhardt sounds like a movie. Like, it's crazy, especially at the time when it came out in the 1840s. Some of the stuff you're just like, what? We're getting into it. So Johann Blumhardt was 30 at the time. He was 33 when he was appointed in 1838 to serve as a Lutheran pastor in two areas of Mottlingen and Hogstedt, both in the northern end of the Black Forest in Germany. His predecessor commented on how the place was a sleepy area that for some reason greatly resisted any good news being preached, with his congregation often just falling asleep in the pews. So they were just kind of salt of the earth people, like, you don't have to spread the good word here. We know how much it sucks. We're here for it. So after 3 years of being the pastor of this little area, he has a spiritual encounter that will not only change his life, but the lives of everyone in town, as well as everyone in the entire region, because it gets wild. So it all begins around 1840 with one of his parishioners, a young woman of 25, I believe, by the name of Gottlieben Ditus. She did not come out on the winning name there. On some accounts I found, they referred to her as Theophilia, but I think Gottlieben is the one that you'll find the most information on, which I don't know why there were two different names for this woman.
Theophilia sounds like a problem.
Yeah. She sounds like a demon.
It just sounds like some type of disease or mental issue.
Anyway, Gottlieben. Should I call her Gottlieb? I guess it's not going to matter since she was a
Yeah, just come up with a good nickname for her.
We'll call her Gottlieb.
So, or, yeah, Gotti. Gottlieb.
She was the youngest of five kids born to a poor couple who had moved to the outskirts of the area. The children were Andreas, Hans, Katharina, Anna Maria, and Gottlieben. So she definitely got the short end of the stick on the names here. She got a very, very German name. The parents had unfortunately passed away before Blumhardt was to come to the area and be the pastor. Gottlieben was known as a very God-fearing woman, and it's quoted, or she was said to have a gift of, quote, being especially alert in an inner way and receptive to deeper insights. To me, that just kind of sounds like a way to describe an empath without knowing how to describe an empath.
I'd say that's a fair assessment.
You were going to describe one in the 1800s. That would be the way to do it. Gottlieben had been stricken by all sorts of odd illnesses her entire life. It was also said that she had a quote unquote nervous disorder, and these would culminate in epileptic seizures. And her luck was so, I guess, off with all these ailments and shit that people in town started to think there was something a little more nefarious with her. Like maybe something supernatural were causing all of these problems that she was having. It also kind of started to ramp up questions as to whether she was into some other sort of practices, specifically folk magic, where she was kind of bringing these afflictions onto herself, maybe. Again, you got to consider the time period. It's the 1800s, so anybody that walked with a limp and had a seizure, they were probably like, witch. But she was, Gottlieb was a favorite parishioner of the pastor that went before Blumhardt. His name was Reverend Barth. She was noted as being very versed in writing songs and singing, and she would often compose hymns that the church would use in their everyday congregations. Then old Blumhardt takes over. It's quoted that Gottlieb here was not a fan of his positive preaching. She said the first time she heard him spoke, she had the uncontrollable urge to scratch his eyes out.
That's weird.
That sucks.
And it's not very godlike.
No. But she wasn't trying to hear the good word. She's trying to hear the bad word. On the flip side of that, she was always around him, though. She would come to all of the, attend all the weekly sermons at both churches that he was pastor at. She would make it her way to be there. And that in itself, she would walk several miles to get to both of those churches, despite having ailments and, quote, despite having different lengths of her legs. So Gottlieb had two different size legs.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's not especially, very fun getting around.
Especially when you got to walk miles and miles. But she was devout, if nothing else. Can you imagine walking like 8 miles to church and then all you want to do is scratch the reverend's eyes out?
Yeah, it's a little counterproductive there.
Yeah.
But so the first dude, he talked more doom and gloom than positive.
Yeah. He said he started out like it was inferred that he started out like trying to push a good narrative and nobody was trying to hear it. They're like, our lives are so shitty that we don't want to hear about it getting better because it's not. Which
it's interesting. It sounds like a whole town of just oppression.
It made me, when you get into the crux of the story about all, it said 1,067 demons, but you're going to kind of get the feeling that demons is a very loose term. It almost feels like she was embodied by spirits, I guess, of like, possibly human people mixed with some very nefarious things. But it reminded me of Hellfire Farm, where they said the location of the, like the foundation of the old house, like they saw all these spirits kind of congregating on the same area. Like they were all coming to the same thing. It kind of made me feel the same way about this. Back to Gottlieb here. So when the Didas family moved into the area, they moved into this first level floor of an apartment kind of on the outskirts of town, right? They didn't have a lot of money. They were just trying to make do with the best that they can. It's reported that the very first day they had dinner after getting all moved in, they were sitting around the table and her older brother Andreas was saying grace. When he got to the point, come, Lord Jesus, be our guest, Gottlieb was thrown out of her chair and thrown onto the floor, knocked unconscious. As soon as he said it, just out of nowhere, she was flung from her chair, knocked into the floor. Not a good sign, right?
No, it's not a good way to start the dinner there.
No. They were like, okay, this is weird, but, you know, Gottlieb hasn't had a whole lot of luck. And maybe this is just kind of par the course here. From there, other weird stuff began to happen in her presence. It was said that there would be weird banging on the walls. Like as they were in a room, they would hear it on the outside of the room. There would be shuffling and walking heard in a room where she was sitting by herself. She reportedly started seeing strange little figures, like little beings and entities running around the room and stuff. Her family would see odd lights At the same time, whenever she was seeing these apparitions, they would kind of manifest as lights to people that I guess weren't as connected as she was, but they kind of correlated with one another. She also said that she got strange urges and things just to contort her body into weird, very unhuman positions. She said that like her hands would move on their own, almost like she was stacking something to heights she couldn't reach, just all sorts of weird body morphs and stuff. The neighbors immediately thought something was strange. Something was up because like, obviously they already thought she was kind of weird and now weird stuff's going on.
I mean, if she's outside playing invisible Jenga, it's a little strange, activity there.
Yep.
But unfortunately, also, interesting note is how, and we've never thought, I don't think we've ever thought about this or talked about it, the idea that these things are manifesting to people at the same time, but in different images. Like she would see these little imps, for lack of a better term, and other people would just see lights.
Oh, it makes
that's
me
fucking think, weird.
It makes me think of Dr. Carla Turner investigating the UFOs, where there was one case where a woman is getting taken from her bed, essentially. She's laying in the bed and she sees the roof open up and a light above her and being pulled out of the bed. Hmm. The two other people that were in the house, one of them was another woman who was staying in the room with her, and the other was the man who owned the house. He heard the uproar, comes walking down. As he and the other woman are standing watching, there's no hole in the ceiling. There are lights outside, but they're watching her being levitated up out of the bed. So it's two different experiences as the same experience.
That's so weird. That's super weird. It does. It's equally terrifying, the fact that there's like a form of active manipulation within the environment.
It sucks that it's specific to people too. Like specific,
or even it could even be an afterthought manipulation as well, like a screen memory of sorts for everybody else around.
That. Yeah, I did not think about that.
It's weird.
Where am I at here? Oh yeah, neighbors seeing the weirdness. Unfortunately, you have to consider the time period, which is the 1840s, and they were a poor family. So the neighbors just kind of wrote it off like, just poor people doing poor people stuff. We're not really that worried about it. It started to get so bad that Gottlieb decided that she was going to come and confess to Blumhardt, which I'm not a religious expert at all, but do Lutherans do confessions?
I would not know about that.
Which I thought was strange. There are little different parts in the book, that awakening, because definitely go read it, because there's a lot of transcripts directly from Blumhardt that you're going to want to read, because he said something about taking confession and how he normally didn't do it, but she was so adamant about wanting to confess her sins to him that he decided to take it for. I don't know. Anyway, Blumhardt said that her confessions were so vague that he couldn't really offer her any help. He basically just instructed her to pray about it. Over time, she would exhibit other strange and weird behaviors around the Reverend, at which prior to this confession hadn't been a thing. After this, she refused to look him in the face. Whenever they would talk, she would turn away. She also refused to acknowledge him when he were to greet her at church. You know, when they walk around and do their hey, yeah, how are yous, she would just look away. When he would sit down and pray with her, as soon as he would start saying any sort of Lord's Prayer or anything, she would unclasp her hands, which he thought, that's weird. And this kind of rubbed Blumhardt the wrong way. And he would eventually start kind of feeling like he wasn't doing his reverendly duties well. Like, it kind of started to eat at his mind that he couldn't help her after she'd come to him with the confessions. And now, like, it's just causing a distance between the two. It, in turn, made him want to distance himself from her because he was doubting his abilities as a reverend. Gottlieb did have one person who she confided in, and this was her physician, a guy by the name of Dr. Spath, who listened to a lot of her ailments, but couldn't really ever find a reason as to why all this shit was happening to her. He did, however, keep track of it all, which is a good thing that he did, because this shit gets really weird. He had kept track of all of her weird ailments, from her involuntary hand movements and stuff like that, to the weird auditory, for lack of a better term, hallucinations, to the visual things she was seeing, to these more severe issues she was having. Like, he noted that she would come to him and have like bleeding from her breasts and stuff, which is not necessarily the stigmata, but it kind of falls in the same realm as that you see.
It's definitely bizarre. I don't know if that's a real medical issue or not, but if I was a girl,
cancer or something, maybe.
I don't know. If I was a girl, that would definitely disturb me.
Yeah. Kudos to her for going to the doctor when that happened.
Yeah. It shows, if anything, it shows a level of mental awareness, because at a point here, you do start to wonder if she does have, if she's experiencing some type of psychotic break.
Yeah.
Because she rejected the reverend so hard, which makes it, and she's almost acting like, from the initial descriptions, like a little child, like being petty about it. You know what I mean? And it also makes you wonder, who is the one causing it? Is there some type of oppression over the reverend, or is it over her? It's hard to disseminate which one is actually the root cause of the situation. But when you're initially describing it, I'm like, man, maybe she just lost her mind. But like I said, at the bare minimum, at least actively seeking help over it shows a level of like mental awareness. Like, there are things that are wrong. I need to go get this figured out because something's not right.
Yep. And the fact that she initially went to him for help in here, wanting to hear wanting him to hear her confession. And then that's when things started to ramp up, kind of leans more toward like, maybe it was a demonic oppression, because they're like, no, we're not having this. And then they ramped up her aversion from him.
And then it also makes you wonder, why was she so vague? Was it vague on purpose? Which I highly doubt, because you wouldn't go to confession to be vague.
No.
You would go to confession to get it off your chest.
Yep.
And being vague does not do that.
Yeah.
Or was it like almost like a forceful vagueness by the oppression or the oppressor? You know what I mean? Like it wasn't allowing her to fully, because you've seen cases where the possessed is trying to say the Lord's name and they're unable to say the Lord's name.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there was definitely something else at play there, especially for it to get to the point to make him question himself so hard that he started shying away from her as much as she was shying away from him. Like, that's a power play right there.
That's like a double negative for the situation. Like, that's a win for the force at play there, because now you've, almost in a roundabout way, you've made him second guess himself, which in a weird way could make his ability that much less.
Yeah.
You know, it's because once those people start doubting themselves, they lose a step.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It kind of goes a very similar route to some other possession stories that we've heard. So 2 years later, the banging noises just got worse and worse and worse. All the phantom sounds. It got so bad that other people in town, keep in mind, they don't live directly in town, so I don't know how far away it is, but the banging noises from the lower apartment could be heard in town.
That's crazy.
Yes. Yes. It got so bad that like people living in town started going to Blumhardt and is like, hey, you probably want to do something about this. Because it also came out that Gottlieb had started seeing apparitions. She said that she was telling her family members that she was seeing a woman standing at the end of her bed who was holding a deceased child in her arms. She just kept repeating, I just want to find rest. Give me a paper and I will never come back again. They, right? So I'm assuming the family that came to him was Gottlieb's siblings, probably her sisters. And like, mm-hmm. Hey, she's starting to see shit now. The last thing Father Blumhardt wanted was them to kind of, he quote said, he feared them being sucked into spiritualistic practices, right? Because their first thought was, do you want us to try to contact the spirit to try to find a way to put it at ease? And he's like, do not. Whatever you do, do not try to contact whatever this is. The more energy you give to it, the more energy it's going to get. Don't do it. He said, just pray and see what happens. So he prompted the rest of the family to kind of find somewhere else to stay and leave Gottlieb there by herself to pray, try to get everything cleared up. Well, one of the sisters was like, no, this is too much. She went back to stay with Gottlieb. And when she got there, the thumping sounds and everything just started to go haywire. So the two got up and decided to investigate, like maybe it was something physically in the house making the noise. Maybe it's a raccoon. Maybe it's a, I don't know. At this point, like, I feel like they're just stressed out to the point where like, we got to figure out what's going on. As they're walking around the house, there's a little shaft of light that's coming through one of the curtains and it's shining on these floorboards. So the women decide to pry up the floorboards, right? As they're prying up the floorboards, they find a scrap of paper. And there's a bunch of stuff written on it, but it's too smeared because it was written in old like charcoal. It was too smeared to read what it said. They also discovered three little metal crowns, and one of them was minted in 1828. After discovering these things and giving them to Blumhardt, the activity in the house dissipated for about 2 weeks. So it was almost like whatever this woman was wanted them to find whatever this paper and these crowns were. So Blumhardt, of course, was like, after he'd prayed over the crowns and the paper and everything, was like, hell yeah. That's probably not his exact words, but he was like, yeah, we solved it. Everything's good because everything quieted down. The family went back to being cool. He even wrote a letter to Reverend Barth, who used to work there. And was like, hey, all this spook business has come to an end. Did it? No.
The metal crowns are weird.
Yeah. And they're old too. They were like, one of them minted in 1828. That was before like the family had ever even lived there.
That's really bizarre. Crazy. And the fact that like, it's even weirder that how they found it. Like they saw a little ray of light come in and hit the floor. And they're like, this is where we need to dig.
Pry the floorboards
out. It's so, that's so fucking crazy. Friggin'.
Weird. So they got 2 weeks of peace, which again, you hear this often in the Hellfire Farm case, in the haunting of the Andrews family. Like they'll come in, do some cleansing and some holy work and things subside for a hot minute. But then they come back and it was not very long before the thumping sound started ramping up again. This time, because at first it was only at night. That's why the other members of the town were so angry because it kept them up all night. Well, now it's happening in the daytime. There were also other, after they found the crown and the pieces of paper, other weird objects started to be found. They found weird powders in the walls. They found odd, like almost occulty objects were found placed around the house. And this kind of led more people to think that maybe Gottlieb was into more nefarious things than was originally let on. This caused Dr. Spath to come and stay overnight with her. And he stayed twice just to try. He wasn't necessarily trying to figure out what was causing all the issues. He just wanted to document them. And when he got there, he said it was way worse than Gottlieb had let on when she met with him. He said the noises were unbearable. He said there was no way that anybody could even sleep in the house. He said her involuntary muscle movements, he said, got so bad, like she was completely contorted out of bed and things. Like, she did not let it on that it was as bad as it was.
That's terrifying. I couldn't imagine, going through your house and finding weird occulty things. And not even so much that you're finding them, but the fact that they start like popping up.
Yeah,
that's bizarre, right? Yeah. And then I would be absolutely petrified to walk into somebody's room and see them contorted out of bed.
That would suck.
I would highly contemplate setting the house on fire.
That too.
And leaving.
That too. Yeah.
So I'd be like, whatever is in here is no good. I'm leaving and I'm going to burn it.
It would almost be akin to walking in and seeing someone levitating off the bed.
Oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
See ya.
No, thank you.
Goodbye.
As the doctor noted, way worse, way worse. The noises got so bad that people were starting to actually like congregate around the house, like curiously wondering what the hell was going on. And as people in town would talk to other family members, they started to spread throughout the area. So people from out of town would come to see this woman and her haunted house. This, of course, kind of got Bloomheart a little like angry, because like it's supposed to be his town, his parish, like he's supposed to have everything under control. He stepped in and said he's going to put an end to, quote, this freak show before it got out of hand. And he did what we would do and put
it on fire.
Close. Investigate it.
Interesting.
A team of investigators, team of ghost hunters, all of reputable stature, the local mayor, 6 village counselors, and a relative of Gottlieb. And they went in to investigate the home, which is awesome. Very first ghost hunt ever.
It is kind of cool. Also,
I don't know that that's true, that it's a very first.
It speaks to the mentality of the people of the time, and arguably so the bravery.
Yeah. They're like,
because they, back then, they were far more God-fearing than people of today are.
Yeah.
And you could imagine how scared some of them were.
And they're probably
going into that situation.
It's the mayor and it's city council members. They probably are the ones that catching all the complaints. Like,
yeah,
figure out what is going on so we can go to bed.
Yeah, true.
So on the evening of June 9th, which was a Thursday, 1842, the team entered the house and began their investigation. They were immediately greeted with spontaneous bangings and knockings from every wall in the house. So they went in and whatever was going on was ready to rip. But they said the center of the activity was Gottlieb's bedroom. They said within 3 hours, hundreds of knocks were recorded, with 25 being of exceptional note, being hard enough to knock plaster dust off the walls, hard enough to knock a chair over, and caused the ceiling and the windows to rattle. Villagers outside said it sounded like fireworks exploding. During all this, a persistent and gentle tapping drew the investigating team beneath Gottlieb's bed. So something under there was just constant tap, constant rapping. When they went under there to look, they didn't find anything. Granted, they didn't pull any floorboards up. I don't know if they do later or not, but it would be interesting to try to figure out what was under there.
I feel like at that point, that probably would have been the go-to move is to pull up the boards.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless they just didn't want to know what was under there.
That's fair.
Especially having something constantly like tapping.
I think at that point in that situation, I think I would be so angry at all of it. I would just start ripping the floorboards up.
Yeah. Especially if I lived in
just
the house.
Ready, just either ready for answers or ready for a fight.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't care if it's Skeletor underneath the floorboards. Somebody's catching these hands. It doesn't matter. Because you're going to be one of two things. I think you'll have moments of both. You're going to be terrified most of the time. But after a while, you're probably going to slightly adjust to it and you're going to start getting pissed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially when you're lacking sleep and like, yep. I keep referring to those last two cases. Like, you know how much that weighs on people. Like, look at the Andrews family like that. They were hard up at that point.
And I think at that point I'd either look at my wife and be like,
we're getting out of here.
Come under the house with me and fight this thing. Or I'm calling the boys up and doing work. Yep. Or you just collectively come together and say, let's leave. This is stupid. I'm not living like this anymore. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't care if we go into unimaginable debt. I don't care. Anybody that volunteers himself to just stay in that situation, in an unbearable situation, is out of their mind.
Yeah. They're also a product of the times. They didn't have anything to begin with, so they probably didn't really have anywhere else to go.
I absolutely understand that and agree, but dude, what do you do? Like,
burn it down.
That's probably what I would do.
Yeah. Like, we don't have an option now. Sorry about
that. Yeah. We got to figure it out. We have to.
It was also in Bloomheart's notes that whenever they entered her bedroom, a lot of the sounds decreased when they were in there. But as soon as they would walk back into the living room, the sitting room, as he said, they would immediately ramp back up, almost like it was toying with them a little bit, like making them question what the fuck was going on. During this investigation, at about 1 a.m., Gottlieb tells Bloomheart she could hear the sound of an approaching apparition shuffling along the floors. She wanted to identify it to Bloomheart, but he was worried something might actually appear, which he couldn't explain. So he refused her request. She's like, hey, I'm going to call on this thing. And he's like, nah, please don't. Please don't do that. It was at this point that, again, Bloomheart kind of showing his colors here, that he's not very prepared for what's going on. When Gottlieb said she heard something approaching, Bloomheart's like, nah, we're done. Paranormal investigation's over for the night. We're going to get out of here.
We have completed the mission. Yeah.
We're going to get out of here. Sorry, yeah. Girl, you're on your own.
Yeah, that is him being afraid. That's what it is.
He says it in his notes. He's like, I feel like at that point we needed to regroup and reflect on what we were going to do because we have never encountered any kind of phenomenon like this before. He said, we are so out of our element. He's like, I don't even know.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
What to do to combat it.
And to be fair, if he's the man of God, he's essentially the sword and the shield in the situation.
Yeah. You almost have to respect him for knowing that he was out of his element.
Yeah. I am going to lean that way because, like I said, I feel like in those cases, if you walk into that environment unprepared,
there could be a lot more
terrified. Yep. I agree. I think in those situations, you can be out of your element extremely fast. And when you are, you need to evacuate.
Yeah.
Because if you stand on your toes and fight that battle, when you are not confident that the Lord has your back, then he probably doesn't and you need to leave.
Yep. You might be taking something with you.
Yeah.
So that night was so crazy that a crowd began to gather around the small apartment, and Blumhardt was then summoned from his home because they had found Gottlieb unconscious. When she was revived, when she was woken up, she had reported that she'd seen the apparition of the woman with the dead child again, at which point, as soon as she saw her, she passed out. Further investigation of the house unearthed more weird occult folk magic paraphernalia, including a bunch of small bones in the fireplace, which was later identified as bird bones. So I'm not sure how that plays into folk magic, but I definitely you hear bone reading and all kinds of stuff like that. So at this point, Blumhardt's like, we've got to figure out something here because this is now even more so physically affecting this woman. Like she could essentially die if she passes out and hits her head or some shit. So he set up alternative accommodations for her and her family while they decided to investigate this paranormal phenomenon. It was agreed that she'd stay locally with the family of her godfather during this time. At this point, they didn't realize that this would entail her staying there for an entire year to try to stay out of this house.
I don't blame her there.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's when she should sneak back over, catch the house on fire, and then go, oh, look, I have nowhere to go. I guess I'm living here forever.
Sorry about you. So this all, of course, put a great burden on Blumhardt because he's supposed to be the town parishioner. And he had a pastoral duty to try to help these people spiritually. So he met with the mayor and they decided to pray for wisdom and discernment regarding what was going on with the Didas family. They both resolved to maintain a view of the matter that lay purely in the bounds of religious scripture. If we're going to go about this, we're not going to do anything woo-woo. We're going to go directly what we know, and that's via the Bible. For the next couple of weeks, again, word was getting out. More people come to the house. More people are trying to get experiences of the rapping and all this weird stuff going on. This gets weird here because even a few out-of-town Catholic priests came to try to get into the house. I don't know what their means were, if they were going to try to cleanse it or what it was, but Blumhardt stood 10 toes down and denied entry to everyone in the home.
That was dumb.
Unless he just didn't.
In my opinion.
Yeah, unless he didn't want it spreading but you kind of get a feeling for him that he wanted to be the hero of this story. Yeah, You want to be the hero.
Ego. It's 100% that.
You ran when the ghost showed up, dog.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was literally getting ready to wait until you like took a break, and I was gonna be like, you know what? I commend the dude for wanting to fight, but then the fact that he's like, oh shit, the reinforcements have showed up, and I'm gonna be like, no, get you go on and get.
He's like, no.
And I'm saying that old Gotti, she missed an opportunity there. Man, she could have made money letting them fools come in there. Oh, yeah. And she could have just moved. She could have been out. Yep. She would, you know, advertise her haunted house, get some little whatever coins they use, and then roll out.
Let's see ya. Where am I at here? Oh yeah. So Blumhardt stayed 10 toes down, put a police presence there. Was like, don't let anybody in this house. Little did he know was that it's not the house that's haunted. Unfortunately.
That sucks. That changes everything.
Yeah. Because as Glotley's hanging out in her new godfather's home, what happens? All the weird shit. The banging starts on the walls. The rapping starts. The little elemental apparitions start. Like, it all just starts over in this new house. At one point, they thought she was having an epileptic seizure, but it wasn't quite an epileptic seizure, and it lasted for hours and hours. They said after whatever was happening to her, after it was over, she was just so physically spent that like she just stayed in bed for days. Dr. Spath was of course called. And he was privy of like epileptic seizures. And when he saw her going through what he was going through, he was like, that is not anything that I've seen before, from the weird body contorting and all that shit for just hours on end. He was like, yeah, it's probably the most disturbing thing that I'd ever seen happen. And he said it was strange because she would get to the point to where it would almost be like she was so, not necessarily emaciated, but so dehydrated from the constant muscle movements. He said it was like she would snap out of it and ask for a glass of water, hydrate, and she would fall right back into it again. Almost like they were keeping her fueled to keep going.
Yeah. That's a gross, gross feeling too.
He said the most disturbing.
That they were like, oh, this body needs sustenance. We must allow her to ingest it. And then once she does, they're like, all right, and game on.
Yep. That's what they said. Dr. Spath quoted, he was most disturbed that while this was all happening, she instantly sat up and asked for a drink of water. Yuck.
That's terrifying.
Then a little while later, Blumhardt comes in with two helpers to visit Gottlieb. He found her in convulsions again, where he prayed, quote, Lord Jesus, help me. And upon mentioning Jesus' name, the convulsions immediately ceased. Then they would pick up again, followed by immediate cessation as he said the prayer again, Lord Jesus, help me. This cycle lasted a few hours. As Blumhardt was kind of experimenting, like, man, there's some correlation here to the name of Jesus and this thing chilling the hell out. He eventually got Gottlieb to a point to where she would pray with him. And they said that seemed to help quite a bit. Unfortunately, as we know, when you don't get rid of the problem altogether, the problem gets worse. So they said things get worse for Gottlieb, requiring the initiation process of an actual major exorcism. Here we get the engagement of Blumhardt with the quote-unquote demons. Sometimes later at Gottlieb's new home, things get worse. The knocking sounds resume all around her. Blumhardt and his helpers are called in while Gottlieb saw the apparition of the woman with the dead child, the one who first appeared back in the old home twice before. This time she describes the detail of the apparition to Blumhardt, who recognizes this woman as one of his local parishioners who had died 2 years before. She was a widow And it is stated that before her death, this particular woman had confessed several large quote unquote sins to Blumhardt. He observed that this woman, despite her confessions, could not find peace from the things that she had committed. Having described the apparition to him, he and his helpers observed something appear to enter Gottlieb's body. Blumhardt prayed hard, encouraging her to join in prayer. He noticed that whenever he mentioned the name of Jesus, as he frequently did during his prayers, she deliberately pulled her hand apart from the prayer position and screamed that she could not bear the name of the Lord. Faced with a very difficult situation, Blumhardt plucked up his courage and listened to his intuition and prayed fervently for wisdom and prudence that he would what he would do next was nothing more than necessary to deal with the effect of spirit. Following biblical instructions to test the spirits, which they quoted John 4:1 here, he then began to enter a dialogue with the spirit, which he didn't want to do at first, remember? Because he didn't want to delve into that spiritualism. So he decides to talk to this widow's spirit through Gottlieb's body. Here's just a little snippet of what they said. He asked her, asked the widow via Gottlieb, is there no peace in your grave? She says, no. He says, why not? She goes, this is a reward for my deeds. And he goes, have you not confessed everything? She goes, no. I murdered 2 children and buried them in a field. He says, do you not know where to get help? Can you not pray? She goes, I cannot pray. Do you not know Jesus who can forgive sins? She says, I cannot bear the sound of that name. He goes, are you alone? She says, no. He goes, who is with you? Hesitantly, and then in a voice that was not Gottlieb's, she says, the most wicked of all. And then the communication stops. So that sucks.
That gives me goosebumps.
That sucks. The most wicked of all.
That's terrifying, man. And it's so weird, like with the Hellfire Farm. Like, I know that that whole area is rich with all types of lore and belief systems. And it even makes me like wonder, I guess, in this case, forward to like Hitler's obsession with the occult. Like, that had to come from, I would assume, the area that he lived in and the belief systems and the structures around that area. But it makes you wonder what happened there in ancient times, because yeah. Bro, the Hellfire Farm, it is similar to this situation. It just seems off, really. And it makes you feel like in the Hellfire Farm, it just somehow missed the opportunity to enter into somebody.
To latch on.
Like, yeah, it wasn't given, or for whatever reason, it wasn't there. But in this case, it's able to latch in onto her and just wreak all types of havoc. And I don't, dude, it just makes you feel like there were these old towns that
doing
became
the fairest shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Some, because she, like, the way that woman's spirit talks, she didn't talk with a whole lot of regret there.
No. She's like,
she says,
yeah,
this is my reward.
I didn't confess all these murders I did, you know, like,
yeah.
Surprise.
This is my reward for what I did.
Yeah.
Reward is a very peculiar word for the circumstance.
Can you imagine being Blumhardt, who's already clearly out of his element? Obviously, he ran from the first ghost. And now he's like, who else is there with you? And she's like, the most wicked of all.
He's like, awesome.
All right, we're cutting this short.
Yeah. But
he did. The conversation ceased for that moment, right? But he did engage it again a little bit later on, continued in conversation with the spirit residing inside Gottlieb. It claimed to be the widow that he recognized, and that she had already possessed 7 other people prior to Gottlieb. She confessed to him that she had been engaging in sorcery, leading her to believe that she was bound to the devil. The spirit pleaded to remain in Gottlieben, just wanted that body. Blumhardt wasn't having any of this and told the demon that she was not going to be allowed to continue possessing Gottlieb. After further unwillingness to leave, Blumhardt duly exorcised the spirit from her. Bloomheart and the mayor later reflected upon whether or not he should have engaged with the spirit, because that was a large like part of contention in his brain. Like he felt, which kind of made me ask the Lutheran question before, because in looking into other exorcisms, a lot of people believe that only men of the Catholic cloth are able to perform actual exorcisms. I've read stories that pastors and reverends from other denominations that attempt to do this only add more power to whatever being they're trying to get rid of. Because they said I've read anything outside of the Catholic faith is just adding attention to the entity. I don't know.
That's a weird
that, but
that's a weird structure there, because it makes my brain go in two avenues as to why that would be a possibility. And I'll throw the first one out first, because I don't think this is the case, that Catholic priests or men of the Catholic cloth are more blessed or more protected than that of other denominations. I don't think that's the case. I feel like if there is any weight to that, and I'm not saying that there is, but if there is weight to that statement, it is because the Catholics have some type of passage, some type of whatever you want to label it as, that works in these situations. Because what have the Catholics in, say, the Vatican done for years and years and years and years? They've collected and collected and collected and collected.
Yep.
And they have a lot of things in their arsenal that they can use, in my opinion. Not saying that that's the right answer to the question either, but of the two that my brain can come up with, that it makes far more sense to me, because it is really hard for me to believe that Catholicism is the
only
the sword.
Yeah,
it is the sword of exorcisms. I don't believe that.
I also feel like I'm not privy to a lot of religions, and I'll be the first person to tell anybody that. Anybody listening to the show should know that. But I also feel like demons and demonology kind of go hand in hand with Catholicism, right? Because a lot of my family are Baptists, and even going to church when I was younger, and even non-denominational churches and stuff, like, you don't hear a lot about demons. You hear a lot about hellfire and shit like that and hell, but you don't hear about demons as much as you do whenever you kind of lean into the Catholic faith.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about other religions either. I just know about Catholic because that's kind of how Catholics I was raised.
A lot of saints and demons, right?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that kind of has a correlation to the thought processes that are going on. But circling back
it's weird to, well, real quick, it's weird to think that, because what if it's a matter of, like, we talk about this, for lack of better terms, like the infinite intelligence. We talked about the law of one.
Yeah.
Has this all encompassing source that can be used for good and evil. What if Catholicism essentially tulpa'd demons into existence?
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that sucks.
Right. But yeah. And it is. And that's the only reason, assuming the plot line is true, and that's the only reason why Catholics can deal with it, because they are their creator, essentially. That's gross. That's gross. That's gross.
I never thought about that, but I mean,
I'm not saying that's, you know, the end all. No. That's the answer, but
it feels relevant, though.
Yeah. I mean, if a lot of other religions don't have, because you know, you have, and the only one that it's not even a rightful connection, it could be, but like the jinn. You know, jinn are sometimes compared to demons.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I don't know anything about other religions. So
like I said, growing up essentially Baptist, like you didn't hear a lot about demons really. Like Like, it's a lot of hellfire and brimstone. Like, there is a hell, and it sucks.
Right.
But you don't hear about, like, demons. But we also didn't,
it is interesting.
About, didn't hear about, like, saints either. So it kind of like is its own avenue. But all that being said, Bloomheart was really in his own head about contacting whatever this thing was. So he looked to different scriptures and different Bible passages where it talks about, like, encountering people who are possessed by entities and stuff, and kind of eased his mind. So as normal, after this first big contact, a period of respite kind of hit, and Gottlieb was fine for a little bit, but then ramped back in again. This time, Bloomheart decided not to engage in conversation with the demons. He thought, last time, clearly that didn't work. All I'm going to do is pray. He's like, I'm going to pray over, and I'm just going to pray. Instead of focusing my energy on it, I'm going to focus my energy on God and see if that helps out. It is stated that this, in doing this, it resulted in the removal of hundreds of demons by just praying over her, praying for her, and praying to God. Again, they go into better detail in the book. Check it out. Some of these demons, as they are being exorcised, went on to attack Bloomheart's helpers, and they had noticeable scratches and bruises from whatever was being expelled from Gottlieb's body, but Bloomheart himself was never affected, which is kind of crazy, but he's the one kind of wielding the sword, I guess.
I like it. I think it makes sense. Like, his change of tactic. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. But they would also ramp up. At this point, whatever was inside Gottlieb, because you think you're going to skim the low levels off the top, right? They're going to be the ones that go without a fight. All of a sudden, after this particular level of the big exorcism, Gottlieb began self-harming. All, like, scratching at her arms, scratching at her eyes. So this really affected Bloomheart.
That's heavy. Like, well,
what I'm doing is winning, but they're also coming at
now,
the vessel.
Now it comes. Yeah. Now it comes at it. It comes with a cost.
Yeah. Yep. So he would, in between prayers, he would almost have to, like, calm her. He would, like, have to fight and then calm her, and then fight and then calm her. And it was just this constant cycle of just skimming a little off the top and then making sure she was okay, and then skimming a little off the top and then making sure she was okay. The cycle continued with Gottlieb on one occasion complaining of burning hands around her throat as he was praying. The next morning when she woke up, she had a series of blisters all around where she said, essentially, the flaming hands of the devil was around her throat.
That's scary, dude.
Yeah.
And I tip my hat at homie for staying in the fight.
Yeah. After that,
even though he was scared, he still kept trying to figure out a way. And once he changed his, like, it's also a tip of the hat that he was willing to change his tactics, because a lot of prideful people don't, right? A lot of prideful people stick on this, on the straight and narrow. I also want to commend him for not, because he was so out of his element to begin with, I want to commend him on not venturing down darker avenues to figure out what he was combating.
Oh yeah.
The fact that he 100% doubled down on his faith, I think that was the game changer in the situation.
It's funny that you say that, because they go on, the demons essentially go on to say that, like, hey, we weren't ready for you to take that tactic.
Like, I like that. I like it, dude.
So the self-harming continued. Often Gottlieb would wake up after the night saying that she had been attacked all through the night. She'd wake up with huge bruises on her torso. So she said whenever she was able to get up and walk around, she said that there were these unseen entities that were trying to trip her and make her fall down the stairs. Like, they were actively trying to be rid of her, because essentially she is the vessel, but she's also the vessel that's getting them exorcised back to hell.
Yeah, well, it's also that mentality of if I can't have her, no one can.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah.
And it's weird because like all the other clergymen and stuff were trying to talk Blumhardt out of continuing the fight because this has gone on for quite a while. The whole exorcism lasted 2 years. So this has gone on for quite a while. And everybody's like, yo, you're not doing anything but hurting her. So
I love it.
You need to stop. And he's like, no, I'm going to continue to pray to try to help this woman.
And that furthers my opinion about him having this type of spiritual awakening, because that in that right there, that proves everything that we've said. We've talked about how a selfless person actually operates in life. Right. You have all of your coworkers going, hey, stop this. You're not doing anything. You are essentially wasting time. You need to quit. And he had such a spiritual awakening. He is that of a selfless person at that degree where he like almost leveled up, so to speak.
Yep.
And he's like, no, like I'm in this to win it. This is my fight. F off. I got this.
It's pretty 10 toes down.
I think it's gangster, dude. I really do. I think it's awesome.
Yep. He said there was another.
There's such a message in that people should take away from the fact that to my knowledge, I didn't read it, but he didn't even define it as a spiritual awakening. But I don't think spiritual awakenings are that they work that way. I think one day it just clicks for you. And then now this is how I operate my life. Like everything else doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
This is me now.
He said he questioned that first interaction so much that he went on with the mayor just to pray about what a solution was. And he said, the only thing I could come to think of was just focus my energy on her and focus my energy on God. Stop focusing my energy on whatever these beings are.
It gives me goosebumps. I think it's awesome.
It's crazy. They said there was another particularly rough exorcism where he withdrew another couple hundred demons at one time. I don't know how he figures all this math out, but I'm not one to question him, you know. But he said after that, Gottlieb had a profound peace for almost a month, didn't have anything wrong, and he thought he had it done. And he's like I felt such joy in that period of time where she was just okay again. He's like, it was heartbreaking when it came back because it was a constant battle. He said the possessions would come, but as he would clear them, they would get less and less frequent, not less and less in ferociousness, but less and less frequent. And every time they would call on him and he would come and pray over and cast them out. One stormy evening, he got a call to the Ditas home where it had gotten particularly bad. The sisters of Gottlieb had called and said that she had attempted to end her own life several times that evening, where he came in and began to pray over her as hard as he ever had. And as he was exorcising whatever spirits were inside of her, the sisters were writing down what they were saying in different voices as they were coming out of Gottlieb's mouth. And one of them was, quote, "Now the game is up. Everything has been betrayed. You have ruined us completely. The whole pack is falling apart. It's all over. There's nothing but confusion, and it's all your fault. With your unceasing praying, you will drive us out completely. Alas, alas, everything is lost. We are 1,067, but there are many others who are alive, and they ought be warned. Oh, woe to them. They are lost. God forsworn, forever forlorn. Nobody could have driven us out. Only you have imagined it. Only you have managed it. You and your persistent praying."
It almost sounds like Legion.
They said one of them. Why I quoted the first quote. Let me go back up here. I'm going to lose my place, so bear with me. They said one of them, as he was being exorcised, he said, as he was praying, her hand went up. And her fingers were all distorted, and she made the sign of three. And at that instant, she started saying over and over again, "Man, do not mock the time of grace, for your judgment is not far off," which was what was scrawled onto her window at the beginning of the exorcism. She just kept repeating it over and over and over again as she held up these three haggard ass fingers. And I'm just like, man, just the, like reading that, The Awakening, it was like watching an exorcism movie. You're like, what in the hell is going on? But he said that that happened as he forced one out. As she came to after that particular day, she changed her clothes. And as she walked out into the living room, they said she was a different person. She was like a weight had been lifted. Again, had a period of time where there was nothing going on, but then more would pop up. Bloomheart went back to the scripture, and he just kept kind of trying to reinforce his tactics, right? Bloomheart was reminded of Matthew 17:21, which said that some wouldn't come out with prayer and fasting. Taking this on board, he discovered fasting really did help him, sharpening his senses and making his prayer more fervent. Thus, he discovered a curious phenomenon, what he coined as exorcism at a distance, where he could occasionally not have to be physically present with Gottlieb to exorcise particular demons. He noticed that further encounters with the possessing demons appeared to be yet of more spirits of the dead, which it kind of makes you wonder, like, what can humans possess, human spirits possess other humans? He said that a lot of these particular demons spoke in a lot of different languages. He said some of them communicated in French, Italian, German, a lot of these languages that Gottlieb did not speak, as well as other unrecognizable ones that he didn't even know what they were saying, which is kind of a 101
for, interesting.
101 for demonic possession. Bloomheart sometimes saw his battles in the spirit realm gain help via a voice that was not coming from him or from Gottlieb. So this is a different, like, spiritual realm.
That's awesome.
That would chime in and utter biblical phrases such as, "There is still a vision for the appointed time. At the destined hour, it will come in breathless haste. It will not fail. If it delays, wait for it. For when it comes, there will be no time to linger. The reckless will be unsure of himself, while the righteous will live to be faithful." The same voice would also quote Jeremiah 3:25. "You have sinned against the Lord your God, both you and your fathers. From your youth till now, you have not obeyed the Lord your God." Bloomheart sensed that this particular being was on God's side and was there to encourage him to continue his prayer, even if it was simply by being a presence alongside of him. So now he's got, like, big guns hanging out with him, trying to finish these off.
That's wild, man. And then it makes you wonder the whole thing. The fact that he stopped other priests from coming in and helping. He stopped anyone from aiding him. Like, it almost makes you wonder if there was some type of divine calling.
Maybe it was his responsibility to take it.
It was his, man. Like, the whole thing, from him becoming the new pastor to the whole situation.
Yeah.
Because the demons even say, or the spirits or whatever you want to call them, even say, like, it was only you.
Yeah.
That could have done this.
It's crazy.
It's weird, man.
Some of the spirits that were possessing her would be rather resistant from being delivered out of Gottlieb. Even with all the threats and the prayers and the exhortation, desperately pleading with him to remain inside of her, he was suspicious of some sort of diabolical plan to entrap him, but discerned that he should still help them. Because in turn, he was helping them. He was helping her and he was helping them. When the spirit of the widow with the dead child showed up to Gottlieb once more, Bloomheart wondered if this woman's spirit may well be the root of all the infestation. This time, however, the spirit declared that she wanted to belong to Jesus and not the devil. Covering himself in prayer once more, he questioned where she was. So he decided to communicate with her once again once she proclaimed that she wanted to be with Jesus. She replied, "In the chasm." before relating to what changes had shifted in the spirit realm due to Bloomheart's persistent in keeping entirely to using scriptural methods and prayer alone when dealing with Gottlieb and the possessing spirits. The widow explained she wanted to be free from her enslavement in the spiritual realm and finally to be laid at peace. Bloomheart knew the lady well whilst in the flesh, and now she had a thirst for Bible in her life. When she asked him if she could leave Gottliebman and reside in his house, he said no. He's like, nah, I'm good.
No, absolutely not.
However, upon reading and praying about it and the example of Jesus and Legion, Luke 8:26-39, he allowed her to take up residence in his church building after she requested that instead. His only caveat was if Jesus permits it. She then departed from Gottlieben's body, leaving it sometime later, Gottlieben was shocked several times when she saw the spirit of the woman in the church. Being in the possessed state, she apparently had not been privy to the deal struck between Bloomheart and the widow's spirit. So she didn't know anything about it until she was back at church, and then she saw the woman again in the parish. No one else attending the church could perceive her presence, and over time she faded away and her presence was no longer felt by Gottlieben. There was There was subsequent exorcism of Gottlieben in which are of interest, one which was described here below. One spirit claimed to be that of a man who had made orphans homeless. He requested to reside in the church too, which Bloomheart agreed if Jesus permits it. This spirit, however, returned to say that he had not been permitted to enter the church. Thinking this might be a test of how much he was willing to sacrifice, Bloomheart said he could reside in his home, provided that it disturbed no one. This brought another voice from deep within Gottlieb, which then declared that there will... Hold on here. This brought another voice from deep within Gottlieb, which declared there would be no shelter for such a man who had behaved badly toward widows and orphans. In the end, the man's spirit tearfully requested to be sent to Bloomheart's garden, which he agreed, and this seemed to work. All of Bloomheart's ministry with these particular spirits that claimed to be human in origin were done, quote, if Jesus permits it. The final battle with a non-human spirit. Shortly after this, Gottlieb's brother Hans and sister Katharina became possessed as well. Hans was the first to completely rid of his infestation and joined Bloomheart in the attempt to exorcise Katharina in December of 1943. During this final battle, Katharina remained conscious, though it seemed like thousands of voices were emitting from her. The chief one of these claimed to be an angel of Satan himself, rather than a departed human spirit, and that if it was to be cast into the abyss, he would make Katharina bleed to death. Eventually, after about 15 minutes of prayer, she arched her back upwards over a chair she was in and proclaimed with a cry, Jesus is victor, Jesus is victor. Bloomheart had finally reached the end of this Didas family nightmare. At the end of the two-year exorcism process, Gottlieb, through the occasional mopping up of a reinfestation of Hans and Katharina, were required. These were all low-key and nothing like what had happened in the past. Gottlieb experienced the occasional oppression of dark forces later on, but nothing regained entry into her. Her physical ailments all left too, confirmed by physicians, bringing about a complete healing in mind, body, and spirit. So much did she change that she was trusted with the working of the new nursery that Bloomheart had instilled for the village of Mottlingen, whatever it was. But yeah, so the infestation kind of spread to her siblings there, but after Katharina was exorcised of the angel of Satan, which I didn't find too much about because it was more kind of focused on Gottlieb. But there's probably some more information out there if you want to look into
probably. It. I feel like it all starts to make sense when you piece the puzzle together with how many things were inside Gotti, how some are human and some were, because obviously the humans that were inside the human souls, they weren't good people when they were alive. They were all pretty shitty people. Yeah. And I feel like whether it was a deal made or just their punishment, almost like they were conscripted into these demons' army, essentially, to make their unit stronger by having more souls. But once they started figuring out that, oh, shit, this dude's legit, Jesus is legit, I'm trying to switch sides up in this.
Yeah.
And
next,
they started jumping ship, which made the overall effects of the demonic forces dwindle.
Yep.
I like it, man. I think it's a great story.
Yeah.
Fantastic story.
Pretty crazy. And like I said, it's wild that we never heard about it. But again,
yeah.
I used a lot of different sources. The Exorcism, Fact Not Fiction, you're going to want to look up. Definitely check out The Awakening, One Man's Battle with Darkness by Friedrich Zundel. I think it's on Amazon. You can find free versions out there. Short reads, like 160 pages. Reads like a movie, and it's got exact translations from his accounts that Zundel translated and put out in this book. Has some websites too. Let me quote them real quick before we get out of here. Primarily, I use Ghost Ghouls and God.co.uk, and then archive.org. and plow.com, and then some Reddit articles as well. But yeah, been a minute since we talked about an exorcism. I thought that would be an interesting one.
That was probably my favorite one we've talked about.
And it had really a good happy ending.
Yeah, which is a rarity, but
yep. So kudos
is awesome. To
our old homie Bloomheart here for just sticking to his guns.
Yeah, he stood 10 toes down and kept with it. He stayed in the good fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't. That would be so terrifying.
Oh, man, it would be draining.
Yeah. And like trying to help somebody and watching it take a physical toll on them and there's nothing you can do about it. And the fact that
it puts you in a weird space.
Yeah. The fact that he was like so caring of her too, to like battle and take a break and then battle and then take a break and then battle and take a break. Like
I said, that to me, that demeanor he started to carry is what it means to be a spiritual, to be a loving person.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is what it means.
At that point, it went from, like, you can almost feel the shift where he went from, you know, ridding her of demons to like saving her life.
Yes.
And then even more so to where he was also attempting to save the spirits of those that were inside of her as well.
Yep. Like I said, dude, that legit, like, he embodies what should be embodied when you talk of being all loving and being spiritual and so on and so forth. That is it.
Yeah. And he was even
that,
like,
is it.
Was even not even like, he was a little, he had a little parish. Like, there was 800 people in that town. That's tiny. That's
awesome.
Tiny.
I'm saying that's the way that it's meant to be.
Yeah.
It really is, man. That's the way it's meant to be.
So, yeah, everybody check out the book. If you want to read it, like, some of the things that he dealt with her is creepy. I only touched on a couple. Like, the three fingers was weird, where she just reciting was etched into the window mysteriously. That was creepy. The most wicked of all was, I read that and I'm like, oh, that's not
a
good thing. But again, thanks for hanging out with us this Monday. Go check out our interview on the Higher Side Chats. Show Greg some love. And check us out on all our social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Come and hang out. Be part of the cult. Till we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and I don't know. Don't hang out with the most wicked of all. Or do. Live your life.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.